Welcome back to Ruthless Aggression. Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you for joining us on your Turkey Day or your Black Friday here with Rob and Chris. We're going to go back to 2005. We're going to talk about Survivor Series 2005. A really fucking good Survivor Series. And then we're also talk about the week in itself. A lot of actual good movies came out in that week. If we're gonna talk about that, so I'm eager to get to that. That was a very, very, very clutch weekend for me. But we obviously begin with current day, and we just got done with the Survivor Series from Barclays Center. Now, I had two very interesting choices on Sunday night of what I wanted to do, because could did anything in the world. But my only two choices, if I could pin it down, I could go home to Chicago. I could go watch a monumental game at Soldier Field between two black quarterbacks, two athletically gifted black quarterbacks in Lamar Jackson, former MVP, and my prince who was promised, hopefully a future MVP and Super Bowl champion, Justin Fields. That was option number one, right? Option number two was take the bus up to Brooklyn. Go have some fun at Barclays for the 5,000th time, like I've done so much, and go to Survivor Series while I was expecting a very fun show, couple surprises, maybe even Dwayne The Rock Johnson. How fucking special would that have been to see The Rock at Survivor Series? So obviously my two options were once in a lifetime matchup between two athletically gifted black quarterbacks and The Rock coming back to challenge Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. Rob, between the two options, which one would you say was the most fruitful for you?
Rob actually just stepped away, so that's kind of funny. But yeah, he just went to, I think, fill up his water bottle, but he'll answer that question in just a sec.
For you, because you probably have to sit through that garbage.
Yeah,
the other garbage, not Survivor Series. Survivor Series is kind of decent, despite The Rock not showing up.
Yeah, that Ravens Bears game was pretty hard to watch. I'm not going to sit here and lie. I mean, obviously, you know, Lamar got sick, and it was Utah's Tyler Huntley. Had enough of dealing with Utah all weekend. So thankfully, it'll be the only time we'll be talking about that. Even though, you know, I had my reasons for pretty much expecting that to happen to Oregon at some point. But yeah, that Bears Ravens game was kind of tough to watch. He was asking, by the way, before you stepped out, which was more fruitful for you, that game or Survivor Series?
Oh, man. Probably Survivor Series. It had at least a couple things that I enjoyed. Like, you know, Bears Ravens really didn't have anything that I liked. So, you know.
Yeah, it was a very painful option of the two choices there. But we've gotten around, well, I've gotten around to a decent portion of Survivor Series. It was an okay show. We'll start with the main event because I'm just not here for it. I said that last week. Everything with Roman's getting very predictable. Was it a good match? Yes. Was it a great match? No. No, it was not. And just not the finish I'm looking for if you're not going to give me a surprise that is Rock coming out at the end of it. I thought it was just bland.
Well, that's kind of the thing. Like, I like that match. But, you know, for a 20-minute match, about 10 minutes of it was build. And I think it was a little too slow of build. And, you know, we talked last week about how the Usos always have to help Roman, and they didn't do it this time. But this kind of would have probably been a time that made sense for him to do it. I would have maybe not had them do it at SummerSlam and then had them do it here. But yeah, I mean, you know, I like Roman and Big E. I think it made Big E look good, you know, even though he lost, but
he kicked out of the spear. He's
yeah.
One of the only people to do that.
I think, you know, there's meat on the bone if they want to go back to it, but yeah, overall, I mean, it was a little less than I was expecting. I think
that even though the finish was what it was, I think that starting with Becky Charlotte was a mistake. I think that those two could have been flipped around if they were just going to go for the clean finish.
Yeah.
And even if you like even if you do that dirty finish, I mean, I don't think anyone was going to really care because most people like Becky and whatnot. So they would have, that would have been whatever. And it Becky Charlotte going into it, let's, you know, play the cards for what they are. That feud had the most excitement and buzz around it. I mean, Roman Biggie was done well on TV, but outside of everything else, Becky Charlotte was getting the most promotion. It got the build to videos. It got the documentaries and stuff like that. All the, you know, the news hits and all the interviews and stuff like that went to Becky and Charlotte. So I was surprised only for that reason, just because it had the most heat and most fastball. And it felt like everything was playing catch up after that, because Becky and Charlotte did, I think, a really outstanding job of starting off the show. I think that match was great. And yeah, I would have personally just flipped those two, and then the show probably would have, you know, probably coalesced a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about it. I don't know that you could do that match with that finish.
But even so, like, it's not the first time they've ever done something like that as the finish. Like, even if that is what it is, like, okay, whatever. If they can do the finish that they did at Mania 35, they can do that finish.
Yeah.
Please.
I don't know. Like, a lot of people would argue that, you know, that showed a weak finish anyway, so.
But that's what I'm saying. But no one cares, because it was the first women's main event, and they still did that. So if you can do that finish in the first WrestleMania women's main event, you can do it at Survivor Series. That's just what I think. And it wasn't even similar. It was Becky used the ropes to outsmart Charlotte at her own game and prove that she is superior to her, which was the point of the whole thing anyway.
Yeah. No, I think you have a point. Just, you know, Becky and Charlotte was a good match too, though. Really the two highlights of the evening on the main card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed Becky Charlotte, and, you know, for all the reasons. And I said last week, if you main event that and you open with, you know, the champion versus champion on the men's side, you know, you have that option. It would have been a very strong option given the emotional weight of the match, how the two were able to get through that to just deliver as they always do. You know, you flip that. You don't even really have to flip that. Like, you could have did Roman Big E. I know Roman's like, oh, I only open or I close. I mean, for your fourth match, nobody's, you're not hurting anybody. Even if you're at halftime of Sunday Night Football, so I mean, like the second to last match on the card.
Yeah,
you know, put them behind the men's Survivor Series match, a really good Survivor Series match. You know, that would have worked perfectly for them. But yeah, it just fell flat as a, you know, as an ender for me. Don't care about really the other matches. Really, were filler. You know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the 5-on-5 matches, I didn't like them overall, but they did a good job in making the right winners, first of all.
Yes, for sure.
Are the good choices. And then, you know, to keep Tony and Liv strong since they're next up for those titles, that was good. You know, I think they got a little over-reliant on countouts, and a lot of them, with the exception of Owens, didn't make sense. I think there could have been a better way to get Drew and Lashley both out.
Well, I don't know what to really say about the women's one. I wasn't surprised,
yeah,
necessarily. Just,
you know,
because obviously they always find a way to protect Sasha. So
I think the thing is, and you know, we'll kind of draw comparisons to this later in the Survivor Series match we watch. You know, like, it's okay if people get pinned. You can make it. You know, you don't have to have four countouts, and
or you can find a more creative way.
Yeah, exactly.
To get them out of the match, you know, have Lashley get disqualified.
Yeah.
Or something, yeah. Or Drew get disqualified or something like that.
I was honestly surprised that they had both of those guys get counted out. I said that while the show was going on, Rob, you can
pick that up. And that's the thing.
Because I get doing it for Lashley.
If you want to do that, then have them, you know, double count out or double disqualification or whatever.
Yeah.
I think a long, lengthy history there.
Yeah, double DQ would have worked a little bit better for me there.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
But and yeah, like I said, you know, the women's match, it wasn't really for me, but I think they did the things that they needed to do, and you know,
Bianca looks strong, and I think that's kind of all at the end of the day, all that really matters.
Exactly.
Out of that, just a couple of notes on Raw. Do we even care about the women's tag team title switching hands?
I don't mind it.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. Like, you know, good for Zelina. She's been doing really good work, I think. And
yeah, and they're pushing her upwards. So keep that trajectory going.
I mean, obviously, the issue is they don't have a ton of tag teams.
But those can be formed at the drop of a hat anyway.
But they haven't. Like, that's the thing. Like,
they can always
happen. That's the thing with the belts.
Right, but they can always happen is what I'm saying. Yeah. Is that you? Yes, that obviously there are no tag teams, but they can sprout them as easily as at the snap of a finger. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad at Zelina getting rewarded with more tangible rewards. I'm not mad at Carmella because this is her first title reign of any kind since 2018, I believe, unless she was 24/7 champion once. But even then, obviously, this is a step above. And honestly, I think Carmella's done a really good job with this new shtick that she has. If you're going to be, you know, vanity and whatnot like that, you need to be over the top. And she's been over the top. She's been an annoying heel. She's done her job. And this is around the time that you make a switch to a heel champion to set up, you know, possibly crowning a babyface set of champs at WrestleMania. So there you go.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
So that's really all I have to add there. I don't mind it.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
I guess we'll see what they grow into, or even if they have
Valkyrie.
You know, that title doesn't have any lineage, and it's been almost 3 years and it has no lineage at all. So, you know,
I think it's
the hardcore title at this point.
Yeah. And I think the problem really for them, it's really bad luck because all the great matches that happened last year with the titles on the line all happened in front of empty Performance Center crowds or in front of, you know, like 100 people or less at Full Sail.
Yeah.
On NXT. So if those matches were in front of, you know, 15,000 seat arenas where you had Bayley and Sasha facing the Kabuki Warriors or Shotzi and Tegan or Alexa and Nikki, they probably would have, you know, been able to level up a bit more. So I think that's the unfortunate part for them there.
Yeah. Just real quick, since you brought one of the people up, do we want to talk about the releases, or have we talked about releases enough where
we've talked?
I thought we talked about it last week, right?
I don't, because they were
happened Thursday night. Oh
yeah.
God, I thought we already passed that.
I don't know, it's the same stuff as always. Like, it's a bummer that they have to do it, and hopefully
Exactly. It's not too much to really say about losing Swerve and losing some of the other folks, you know. Maybe Top Dollar getting the crew kind of, you know, in some problems, but you know, that's all hearsay.
Yeah, but I mean, like, just someone like Swerve is going to be perfectly fine, though.
Right, like, you don't worry about Swerve. You hope that Swerve has pull, and I feel like with his independent run, Swerve should have some pull to where he can bring a shot to Adonis with them, and they can continue even Top Dollar and B-Fab. You know, I would like to see them reform somewhere else.
Yep.
And continue what they were already growing, because that can exist outside of WWE or NXT or whatever. Who else got cut that like we care about? John Morrison, you know, Ty has been very vocal, so it's not a shock, but they won't lack.
Yeah, exactly. No, and I mean, it does feel like, you know, everyone who got cut last week, for the most part, can find work elsewhere. That's what you got to hope for, you know?
Okay. Dana Brooke is 24/7 champion. Don't know what else to say about that.
You know,
it's the 24/7 champion. Yeah, good for her is all I could really say. It's
like, we can, we can all think, you know, it's corny or whatever, but she seems genuinely happy about it. And, you know, it's nice.
Sometimes you can be corny. It is what it is.
You know,
I like how they all just paused and
let her
celebrate.
They literally didn't know what to do because she was a woman. And
right. It's like, we're not going to attack a woman here.
Yeah.
This is a moment for her. So, yeah, let her have it. That was pretty cool. I'm just gonna get the jokes out of the way before we like actually crack on this fan. Top speed, like very impressive sprint speed off the line to get to his man. That was an excellent wrap up. Got his head, crossed the body, wrapped up, made the tackle. I might have to give him a look as a possible recruit. That was a very nice tackle. Either way, a man's going to jail. I don't feel like people need to act like Seth would have beat his ass, because Seth was definitely in trouble. But, you know, people, we cannot, like, yeah, I don't want to say too much about it, because this man definitely looked like he was mentally ill. Mm-hmm. But what are you going to gain from this? You're either going to get an ass whooping, and had this been somebody a lot harder than Seth Rollins, you probably would have got your ass beat. Or you're just going to spend the night in jail and be shamed. And none of those things are, you know, and you're also going to be banned from WWE events for the rest of your life.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, don't attack the wrestlers. It is kind of crazy that, like, the two big incidents of these instances have both been at Barclays. You know, with Bret Hart and Seth Rollins, should probably do something about that.
Here's the thing. And first of all, obviously, I mean, the guy doesn't seem well, based on social media posts and whatnot. And, you know, that doesn't make what he did any less wrong. But hopefully he gets help.
Yeah.
Second of all, I think that it's not really a coincidence that most of these, you know, disruptions with crowds, whether it be them being rowdy or whatever, or, you know, fan-related incidents with them, you know, going after people, and I'm not saying that everybody who does this is a chief offender, but it's not a coincidence to me that this always seems to happen during Big Four weekends when they do these wraparound shows, where they keep people in the area and where people, you know, spy and buy tickets or whatever, staying down. It welcomes people who, you know, I don't want to say they're not welcomed there or whatever, because whatever, it is what it is. But I mean, Rosemont in August, the first show back, you had that moment during the Goldberg-Lashley promo, but they were otherwise fine the rest of the night.
Yeah.
I can tell you for a fact that the MSG crowd in New York on September 10th was totally fine and red hot the entire night. Philly passed the smell test as well for SmackDown later that month. And now we have this in another, you know, hot market or whatever in the
New York City. Remind me again what happened in Chicago.
Well, because they did the We Want Wyatt chant or whatever at the beginning of the show and Goldberg or whatever. But
that was also the first show after he was released.
Exactly. But other than that, they were totally fine the rest of the way. So my point is, they did back-to-back nights here in Brooklyn, and that probably invited a crowd that usually, based on what we've seen for the years that they were doing the wraparound stuff, it tends to be pretty bad.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not mad that St. Louis isn't doing wraparound stuff as of right now. I'm not mad that they didn't do that for Mania. It seems like this year, maybe they have plenty of areas to, you know, choose from.
Yeah, Mania,
but they didn't do that for the Rumble in 2020 either.
They can do like Waco or Fort Worth,
San Antonio.
Or
even
they can go down to San Antonio or Austin. Like, yeah. They probably won't. Like, I think if you just keep that to a UK show, like a big UK show, or WrestleMania, because I do think Raw after WrestleMania is it has taken on legs of its own to the point where you're like, you gotta do the wraparound show. Beyond that, like specifically with Barclays, and you know, you say it happens a lot with the wraparound shows, but it always seems to happen at Barclays, and it always seems to be some kind of disruption, whether it be physical or, you know, loud, audible goo-ga. It always seems to come out of Barclays, and it seems like it's the smelliest of folks that you let in on these wraparound shows, because they can't go to the bigger show. Mm-hmm. So they're willing to go and try to make the show about themselves. And you know, it's
Yeah, and it feels like, you know, the Big Four and Money in the Bank going to Saturdays will prevent that, too, because, you know, they're not going to stick around for Raw. And
well, they are doing it for Mania. I just looked up the
travel. Yeah, Mania, but I mean,
Mania, I get it. That's
you know, that, you're, what, that is what it is. Yeah. But no, SummerSlam, I mean, that's a Saturday. You know, Money in the Bank is a Saturday. I don't see it continuing, really. And you know what the other thing is, like, they didn't really come close to filling Barclays last or Monday night either. So it's like, you know, there's no use for it where you could just kind of move to, you know, I know they're running the new Long Island building, I think next week, but you could have done, you know, SmackDown was in Hartford, but you could do, you know, Boston or something and for Raw. And I mean, somewhere close enough to New York. New York,
unfortunately, was booked already for the Legends Classic. So I understand that because, you know, with the Feast Week tournaments and whatnot, they might be all a little
booked, but I think there would have probably been a other arena somewhere in the region.
I don't get what's going on in that Brooklyn borough, but anytime that this keeps happening there at Barclays, it reflects poorly.
Yeah.
And I mean, it always seems to happen, like, fair or not fair, like, the women usually get the brunt of it, and that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Because that happened during the 5-on-5 or whatever on Sunday, and that kind of annoyed me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you were annoyed in the moment. I think it got a little overblown because, you know, they did the wave once.
It did get a little overblown, but it's just, it always happens to them.
Yeah.
They were even mum during that boring-ass Battle Royal, and I was ready to commend them for not shitting on it.
Yeah.
Like, if you're gonna do that, like, do that to the men, man. Like, come on.
That's fair. But, yeah, that's kind of everything going on right now.
Yep.
Now let's go back to 2005. We have SummerSlam. So, okay. One, Survivor Series 2005 on our hands. A hell of a main event. Mm-hmm. Some pretty good, you know, matches leading up to it. We have a 30-minute Triple H Ric Flair match, which is always fun. And then we have really, really fun movies out here in the 2005. Maybe, I can't remember if that song came out yet, but we'll see. I like surprises. We'll see.
Yeah. So
currently just waiting for things to load here. All right, here we go. So let's see. Going to the Billboard Hot 100 for this week in 2005. In the top five, we have Photograph by Nickelback at number five still, Soul Survivor at number four, My Humps, number three, Gold Digger by Kanye West falls down to number two after being number one for quite a while,
mm-hmm.
because Run It by Chris Brown, which was number two last week, has topped the charts this week.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, Gold Digger was on top for quite some time.
Quite a while it was up there.
It's just a sign of just how hard that first album Chris Brown had was.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And then for our movies, number five, debuting at number five, you had Rent.
Saw that after one of the other movies on this list. And, I mean, the film version's terrible. I've never seen it on Broadway or the play, but the film version is really bad.
Number four, moving down from number two, we had Derailed. Number three, we had Chicken Little, and number two and number one are debuts. We had number two, we got Walk the Line, which is a very good movie.
Yes.
And number one,
can't remember it.
It was the
Johnny Cash movie, I believe.
Yeah.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember the actual movie.
Gotcha.
It's been so long since I've seen it.
And number one, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Oh, god damn it. Where did Just Friends fall?
Let me see, because I only do the top five when I click it or clip it. I can pull it up real quick though. But yeah, that Harry Potter movie made like $150 million. Just a huge movie. It looks like Just Friends is 12th this week.
Holy shit.
So it must not have been in a ton of theaters.
Yeah, I'm guessing it was a limited release because it was Thanksgiving.
Yeah, next week it goes up to six. Yeah, it debuted at 12. It was in 2,500 theaters. And yeah, next week it goes up to six.
Okay, so next week might be the actual. Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was the week before or after. Either way. Yeah, Goblet of Fire, one of my top two, maybe three favorite Harry Potter movies, an absolute force. Number two, again, you said was
Walk the Line.
I all I remember from Walk the Line, just because it's been so damn long since I've seen it, is some most of the singing performances between Reese and Joaquin, mm-hmm. which were fantastic. So they really carried that shit as John and June Carter. That's shocking that it started at number two. I would assume that, well, he's Harry Potter, so yeah. Nothing you could do about that. But I assume that would be number one at some point.
Yeah, I mean, no, it just kind of came out when Harry Potter came out, and then it ran into a couple movies that we're going to discuss in December with King Kong, which was huge too. So
I've never seen that King Kong.
Three and a half hours.
Yeah, no, I'm good. Peter Jackson movies are just not my thing.
Yep.
Because didn't Peter Jackson do Avatar?
James Cameron.
That was James Cameron.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Peter Cameron also did.
Peter Jackson did all the Lord of the Rings. Peter Jackson. And,
never seen Lord of the Rings.
Those are too long.
Way too fucking long for me.
He did, what's that other?
He did it? Another like really big epic that I'm just blanking on because it's.
Yeah, because he did The Hobbit.
He did The Hobbit. And They Shall Not Grow Old as well. Let's see.
Yeah, I'm trying to, because I don't see it here. I thought he was in.
For the longest, I thought George R.R. was just a ripoff of Peter Jackson. No, it's the other way around.
He did District 9.
Yes. Did I see District 9? I feel like I watched District 9. I don't know. Well, I'll think about it on the way.
But yeah, and then we do have really a good amount of wrestling news this week.
But first, I just want to make mention, because I saw this 6 through 10 on the Billboard Hot 100. Because we usually only do 5, but I thought 6 through 10 was interesting because of two songs that jumped up. Sixth, staying at 6 this week was "We Be Burning" by Sean Paul. Mm-hmm. jumping from 13th. Into the top 10 at number 7 was D4L's Laffy Taffy.
Oh, God.
Iconic, life-changing song. Rest in peace to Shawty Lowe.
Because of You by Kelly Clarkson dropped down from 7 to 8. Jumping up from all the way at 18th into 9th was Stick With You by the Pussycat Dolls. And 10th from number 8 last week was I'm Sprung by T-Pain.
Yeah.
Stick With You was a bop, but yeah, no, I'm good on anything Pussycat Dolls.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. And it's Stay Fly by 3-6 Mafia was 13th, and I Think They Like Me by Dem Franchise Boys was number 15th.
What a time to be in America.
All right, so yeah, we do have a lot of wrestling news to talk about here, starting with WWE announces drug testing policy to begin soon. Steroids, prescription pills, cocaine, marijuana. They're really changing things up, and that'll have a big impact. I believe next summer is when that whole thing drops, the Sports Illustrated article. Yeah.
It's 2007.
Oh, 2007, okay. Yeah,
it's 2007, right after the Benoit
stuff. Okay, so we have some time, which is good, because that's a lot. But yeah, they kind of weren't testing for anything for a while, and now, you know, they have to go back for obvious reasons. They had a tragedy and they have to adjust, and the wellness policy, you know, to their credit, they've stuck to it, and I think it's really been a big thing that's changed the industry for the better the past 15 years or so.
Yeah, when you actually have a company that's willing to regulate things like that and then do it openly and honestly, like, it hasn't been, you know, the easiest thing for them to do. But it's made the business a lot better. I think it's saved a lot of guys' lives. And then, you know, it's continuing to put faith in guys who aren't that bodybuilder type, or even if they are, you know, that like, even, you know, nowadays, like, take somebody like Biggie, you know, if he had been in 2005, would have been one of those dudes where you have to worry. You worry about steroids, you worry about everything like that. Like, remember when Bobby Lashley first got in and he was so buff and chiseled, like, there were those rumors of whether or not, you know, he might be a steroid user. And like, no, he was just super disciplined and worked his ass off. You know, it's that I think those are like two of the, you know, biggest signs of the wellness policy kind of leading to that kind of change.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's for the better, man. It really was for the better.
Yeah. And I mean, like, the thing with steroids specifically, like, that one's kind of more your choice. But if you're on, you know, prescription pills or, you know, using coke or whatever, then yeah, I mean, that's something that, you know.
Yeah, then they need to be alarmed. Yeah. Right?
And I mean, even like the first question when Vince announced this, Kurt Angle said, you know, if you're taking a prescription pill, would they be able to tell how much you're taking? So that's an alarming question off the bat for obvious reasons. But yeah, I mean, and even I don't want to say it saved someone like Kurt because, you know, he would leave and then run into his own problems before he came back. But it definitely saved a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely did. I mean, probably ran off some folks too. But
yeah. Know. And then we have a couple other pieces of news here. So when the torch came out, it said Batista was out of Survivor Series as an injury. He's still in the match technically, but his back's messed up. He's going to rehab it instead of getting surgery in the hopes that it doesn't get more messed up, which it will. So that's not great.
It's not great at all.
While they were in Europe, Eugene took too many somas and passed out in the hotel lobby, which isn't what you want, you know, a week after what happened. So he got suspended. He's going to rehab and he'll be back in a little bit. I believe he's got a couple more things in his run.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels put out a book. Bret Hart put out a DVD, both kind of on WWE's, you know, properties. Mm-hmm. I think Bret was on Bite this week as well. So, you know, the comeback's coming. And yeah, that was about it for.
Wasn't he in? It may have been SmackDown versus Raw, but maybe it was 06. Because they made a big deal about him being back in the video game.
Yeah, I don't. Because 2006 had come out like 2 weeks earlier at this time. So I don't know if he made it the cut for that one. No, because that's the one where Hogan and Stone Cold were both in him again.
Maybe it was too, because I feel like I remember him being in a video game before his actual comeback, and it was a big deal back then. I was going to say that points to, you know, kind of the formula for the comeback tour in WWE now, you know, how, you know, you obviously appear in the video game because it creates the idea, and then you get in the Hall of Fame, and then you're back, and you're back in your fold. So, you know, I don't quote me on that because it's been 15, 16, 17 years since I played SmackDown versus Raw, right? But the DVD, Bret's DVD kind of had me wanting a little bit more. Maybe it's just because we're off the heels of the rise and fall ECW. You know, you're wanting kind of salacious content out of your WWE DVDs, which obviously we got with the Warrior one a couple months ago.
Yeah.
But I mean, the Bret's DVD was fine. Sean's book, I think, Heartbreak in Triumph.
Yes.
They eventually just turned into a DVD. And yeah, as the Sean mark that I was, I wore that shit out. But yeah, very interesting that they both came out in the same week around Survivor Series.
Yes. And then just one more thing, which kind of became a tradition around this time. Stone Cold is not on board right now for Austin against Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania, but they'll try to talk him into it early next year.
Yeah.
Did that for 5 years in a row, pretty much.
I was going to say, how many more years did we have to like sit through that? Because they're very clearly not. Like, obviously, Hogan's going to do it, but Austin is
2022 kind of felt like it was the closest it had been to happening. And
when?
22. So coming up on this WrestleMania.
Oh, WrestleMania 22.
Yeah. Right. And then when they didn't do it then, it was just kind of like, you know, they're probably never going to do this. And, you know, to Austin's credit, he stayed retired. So, and I think he will. I don't think, you know, we said that about Shawn Michaels too, but like Austin doesn't need to come back.
I hate that I just realized is that like every year during this decade, we're going to be doing like, okay, we did WrestleMania 21 in 2021. I didn't realize that until now. Because you're talking about 22. I was like, wait, 2022 is next year. What the fuck are you talking about? Oh,
that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then we do have the Monday Night Football game this week.
Yes. The Vikings edged the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau Field 20-17 off a game-winning field goal by Paul Ettinger. I believe this is one of, I believe Ettinger has like two or three game-winning field goals this year. Because
I forgot Ettinger was on that team.
Recently on this podcast. Yeah. So.
Well, yeah, I forgot Ettinger was on that team because I thought Robbie Gould comes there in 2006. He got there in 2005?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it was actually back-to-back weeks that the Vikings won on game-winning field goals. They beat the Giants last week on a game-winning field goal. The Vikings won despite Brad Johnson getting sacked five times and throwing zero touchdown passes. Their only touchdown of the game was scored by Siatric Faison. There's a name for you there.
Wait, this is 2005, right?
Yeah, this is 05, yeah.
Damn it. No, I have Madden 05 and ESPN
2005. Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah. I was going to try to see if I remember this dude, but yeah, no, that's going to be a nope.
Yeah, Donald Driver caught two touchdown passes, and Brett Favre also threw one to Minnesota's Devontae Edwards, who scored a 1-yard pick six.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Packers are 2-8. So
Are 2-8. And the Vikings are 5-5 right now. They're trying to make a push.
Writing on the wall for Mike Sherman.
Soon.
Okay. Let's see here. We get into Raw. They're in England this week.
They are in England this week. That is correct.
October 20th.
Didn't they fly out there like the day after or the day of Eddie's funeral?
Yeah, I mean, they almost would have had to because, like, mm-hmm. that was another thing in the torch. Just like a bunch of people from the company obviously went to Eddie's funeral. And then, they had like a week of shows to do in England before the actual TVs and then had to come back for the pay per view, which couldn't have been easy. All that.
Yikes.
So Team Raw comes out to open the show along with Eric Bischoff. Bischoff says Team Raw is going to prove why they're the best brand, but apparently SmackDown's considering invading. He's got Todd Grisham outside on SmackDown watch. They're not here yet. Probably won't show up because of Raw's army and strength. And Big Show takes the mic and tells Eric not to get it twisted. Him and Kane went to SmackDown because they wanted to, not because they care about Eric. Batista was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And Todd Grisham comes back on and says that SmackDown's outside. Batista tells them to come out and fight. And Shawn Michaels says deal, and Eric Bischoff tells him it's a bad idea, but they go do it anyway. They fight in the parking lot. Batista gets chokeslammed through a car windshield, and he's hurt now.
This was a really freaking well done segment.
Yeah, it was good.
I liked the standoff. I liked the brawl outside. I liked the fact that, you know, they're making Big Show and Kane look like total monsters by chokeslamming the World Heavyweight Champion and injuring him. I said this yesterday, Kane's looked really like a beast three times in his career up until this point, when he first got there, after he was unmasked, and right now, because they are making that dude look more monstrous by the show. And I can say the same thing about Big Show too. So they're doing their damn thing right now with this. I really like this a lot.
Yeah.
And this is obviously this is just the start of this all. Awesome. So
yes,
got some more shit to come our way there.
We move to Ric Flair against Trevor Murdoch, which I don't know how many times in WWE history you've had two NWA champions in the ring. It's exciting. Jesus. Ric kept going after Murdoch.
Oh wait, he's a recent NWA champion.
He's the current NWA champion.
No shit.
Yeah, he beat Nick Aldis.
That's some shit. wow.
He kept attacking Murdoch's knee, which is a good strategy. Then he gets the win, holding the tights, and Triple H comes on the Titantron saying that Sunday is not about winning or losing, it's about surviving. Ric said he beat Triple H if it's the last thing he ever did, and since Ric beat him, Triple H will make sure it's the last thing he ever does.
Fair enough. We get Tajiri versus Rob Conway. Come back from commercial. Rob Conway's in the tarantula, and then JBL comes out, takes out both guys. He called out Team Raw, but Eric Bischoff came out and told JBL he doesn't just come out here to make demands, but since he wants a match, he can have one with Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
So that's fun. Also fun was that John Cena was on Mad TV.
He was.
And they ran a segment about that.
He was. It looked pretty funny. I never really watched Mad TV, but,
I never really
can't remember. I can't remember the episode. It's been so long since, because I think that was the year they canceled Mad TV. Like, yeah. I think he was on the last season.
Kurt Angle's in action against Shelton Benjamin. They censored the You Suck chance again, and Daivari's still the ref. Very good match, though. You know, those two know how to work with each other. Kurt puts on the ankle lock, and Shelton rolls through into cover, but Daivari rolls them the other way and counts the fall for Kurt.
Yes. Well, I mean, everything's coming with Shelton soon. I mean, you could say with this better days or whatever, but you know, I think they're planting the seeds for a Shelton turn very well, though.
Yeah.
Maybe just didn't execute too well, but they're playing the seeds well because he's lost a great deal over the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. All right. After the match, Kurt said that both he and Daivari have been treated unfairly by the fans. Daivari will be Angle's personal referee going forward. Cena appeared on screen. He was going to find out what the other superstars thought about Kurt Angle. Some pretty problematic stuff going on here. Throughout pretty much. And then he asked the fans, and they said Angle sucks. And then Cena finally gets one over Kurt.
Yeah. So it's kind of what we've been waiting for. Mm-hmm. Triple H is in action with Val Venus. Doesn't really care about the match, just gets a chair and keeps hitting Val with the chair after he gets disqualified. Sending a message to Ric Flair.
Yes. And then Teddy Long came into Eric Bischoff's office, and we go to commercial. But on WWE Limited, we learned that they agreed to make JBL Shawn a lumberjack match.
All right.
So then we get Mickie James versus Candice Michelle. But shortly into the match, Trish got abducted by two masked men at ringside. What's going on there? We'll find out soon enough. Meanwhile, Candice pinned Mickie off of the distraction. Then we came back from the break, and Trish was tied up in the back. And it turns out the people that abducted her, Eminem.
Yeah,
that's because Melina wants to face Trish at Survivor Series. She challenged her, and then Jerry Lawler went to find Trish. Sounds like a terrible idea.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. I will She's say probably
in less danger where she is.
Yeah, I will say that up until this point, I think this is one of the more creative women's angles of the Ruthless Aggression era.
I agree.
Yeah,
they had me caring about Melina getting to the ring, and like she's still green at this point. She's not the Melina that we remember her being.
Yep.
And to kind of do this as well as they have, and then I think the match that they had was kind of decent. Once we get to it, I would agree with you with the statement though.
Then we get Michaels against JBL in a lumberjack match. I mean, they actually have a really good match. Goes, you know, back and forth, and then just kind of ends up being a big brawl between Team Raw and Team SmackDown, which was probably the right way to end it. But, yeah, I like that. It was good.
They'll do a lot more stuff in a few years.
Mm-hmm. And that was Raw.
It was. Now let's go to SmackDown, also from Sheffield in the United Kingdom. We will save.
We're going to do sports in the middle.
Yeah, we'll do sports in the middle between this SmackDown and, of course, Survivor Series.
Yeah.
So Teddy Long knows that Raw is going to show up, so he wants the security guards to be ready for whatever might happen. And then we get Booker T versus Chris Benoit for the United States title. Sharmell came out first to introduce Booker T. This was really good, not surprising, given their history and their chemistry together. There was a ref bump. Benoit put the sharpshooter on, then a new ref came out, but then Booker got to the rope. Booker did a superplex. They did the double pin on each other. The angle there, of course, being that both men's shoulders were down. Teddy eventually comes out, and Sharmell points out that if there's a tie, the champion retains. And Teddy acknowledges that, so that he says Benoit's not going to be the champ, but he's going to make an executive decision and strip Booker T of the title to vacate it. And just like they did for the TV title in 98, Benoit and Booker are going to have a best of seven series for the United States title, and match number one will kick us off at Survivor Series.
Yeah, I like that. You know, sometimes you can just let guys wrestle, you know.
Yeah,
just have that be your story.
Yeah
the last time they did it, I want to say, was what, Sheamus and Cesaro?
Yeah. And that led to the bar. And
I don't know if that was their purpose initially, but they lucked into it. I would like to see more best of sevens, especially best of sevens for titles.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, like, you don't need to have this long drawn out feud to get to that point. So yeah. I like that. And, you know, these dudes did it before and it was excellent. Obviously, this doesn't live up to that kind of standard. But still, a show like SmackDown, you can afford to do it.
Yeah. The Dicks beat Heidenreich and Animal.
Ah, the Dicks.
They got their match. Yeah. I did not watch it. I'm not watching any more Heidenreich
and Animal. Didn't watch the Dicks?
I did not.
Gotta wash your dicks, man.
We move on to Kennedy against Matt Hardy. Kennedy brings a chair inside after they brawl outside for a little bit. Gets disqualified because Charles Robinson's trying to wrestle it away from him and gets hit with it.
And of course, you can't touch the official. So
yeah, and Kennedy's new thing is he uses chairs.
Yes.
So Eric Bischoff's here. He says Team Raw will be here very soon.
And they're closer than they think.
Yes. Then we move on to Christy against Melina. Christy attacked Melina during her entrance, and Mercury and Nitro tried to fight back, got ejected. But then Melina got the win anyway and said, this is for Trish.
Send a message.
Yep.
It's good, just good straight line booking right there.
Yes.
Easy stuff. Very easy stuff. Randy Orton told Batista to give him his best match tonight. They are, of course, having a no-holds-barred match for the World Heavyweight title. And not to use the lat injury as an excuse when Randy beats him, Batista said not to worry about that because he beat Triple H. Triple H beat Randy. Batista walked away from Evolution, and Randy Orton got forced out. Well, I mean, nothing that was said was inaccurate there.
You know, the thing is, like, and it might have been like this too on the forums or whatever, but if you're like running a no-holds-barred title match, you know, on TV right now, and it's clear there's going to be an invasion, everyone would just be like, oh, it's not going to have a finish. There's going to be an invasion.
I don't remember what. Because it was tough because obviously this was in the taped era.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, both shows were taped for this time. But yeah, I mean, I think honestly, that kind of shit is kind of just piled up in this decade versus how it was last decade. Because I definitely don't remember that being like really bad complaint. I think people honestly back then were still stuck in the SmackDown's getting shit while Raw gets all the attention.
Yeah.
So I think people were like always rooting for SmackDown to be good.
That's fair.
So I do feel your statement there. I would agree that if that happened now, then yeah.
Nunzio won the Cruiserweight title in Rome earlier this week against Juventud Guerrero. So good for him. He'll be defending it against Juventud in a little bit.
When did they? I know they obviously, you know, they're limited now, but how often did they go to Rome? That's definitely a random location.
It's a couple times, cool,
but like it's definitely random.
Well, it's a couple times a year because you know they're in Milan after Mania next year because Santino comes in or 2 years, whatever 2 years, it is. Yeah. But yeah,
yep.
Carlito and Chris Masters are here. They bought tickets, so they're allowed to be in the crowd. And then Juventud and Nunzio fight, and Juventud wins the title back. So a nice moment for the crowd in Rome, I guess.
And of course, they had the afterwards, Juventud was holding a Latino Heat Lives Forever, I believe, sign on his way up the aisle. So that was cool. That was cool as well.
Yeah.
And then we got Rey Mysterio and JBL versus William Regal and Paul Burchill. Carlito and Masters yelled at JBL, and Shawn Michaels came in from the other side and hit Sweet Chin Music. Rey was left on his own. Masters and Carlito beat him up. The locker room came to help Rey as they flee.
Yes. Lashley defeated Orlando Jordan again.
Yep, just building Lashley as a monster.
Teddy Long is called outside because the security guards he had out there have all been taken out. He wants the whole locker room around the ring for Batista against Orton. So they start that match, and doesn't really go anywhere because everyone from Raw shows up and they brawl on the ramp. Then Orton takes out Caden Murdoch, and Michaels takes out Orton. Mysterio takes out Michaels. Carlito and Masters take out Mysterio. Batista takes out Masters and Carlito, and then he fights off Kane and Big Show, but he ends up outside the ring and gets chokeslammed through the announce table, and they just all kind of keep fighting as the show ends.
That was tremendous. They do this kind of stuff a lot going into Survivor Series or these big, you know, big brawls or whatever in these multi-man matches. That was super well executed.
Yeah.
I loved Orton doing the RKO. I think this is him starting to realize like how much that move gets a big pop. You could tell like he knew that he was going to get good reactions off of hitting the RKOs on Kade and Murdoch and whatnot. So that was a really fun melee at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since we did take that time to recognize Randy, before we get to the actual show, in which Randy obviously plays a huge factor, let's give Randy his props for becoming the for setting the most record for most SummerSlam or Survivor Series most Survivor Series matches, and then also the record for most pay-per-view appearances in WWE history. And when you think about it, Randy is 41, just turned 41 this past April.
Mm-hmm.
He's been around generally last 20 years. Prominently featured. It took him a minute to kind of get himself going. I want to say, like, after his first year, he was really starting to click. And then, you know, even through the different character changes, Randy has just, you know, always been somebody to keep you interested. You know, there's certain dudes that, like, yeah, some of Randy's matches might be a lull, but when you think of WWE at this point, you think of Randy Orton, really modern day WWE. And I think it's rad that he has that to put on his mantle place and to, you know, really stamp his Hall of Fame legacy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree.
Okay, so before Survivor Series, we are going to talk about the world of sports from this week. And reading up on it, there's actually some interesting stuff, especially with college basketball. So back on Monday, Texas defeated West Virginia. Texas at this point in time is ranked number 2 in the polls. They beat the Mountaineers, who were ranked 13th, 76-75. On the final play of the game, with West Virginia down a point, the ball went to Mike Gansey, but he was blocked by one LaMarcus Aldridge. Mm. And Texas survived in the Guardians Classic. I'm going to assume that was at MSG.
Yeah, I think so.
Just by the name of it. So that was pretty neat. In addition, on Tuesday, in a triple overtime game in the Maui Invitational, Maurice Agar scored 36 points for the Spartans,
wow,
but was trumped by Adam Morrison's 43 points, which at the time were a Maui Invitational record, as Gonzaga won 109-103. I remember that game. That was awesome.
Yes, that was very good.
I do too. Those Michigan State teams were really scrappy.
Yes.
While they weren't able to get to a championship, they were really scrappy. You didn't appreciate watching them on the late Big Ten matchups. Gonzaga at this, because this is Morrison's junior and final year, right?
Yes. Because this is the year with that Elite Eight game against UCLA.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Can't wait. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, me neither. That's going to be fun as hell. So moving forward, also on that Tuesday, the Marlins announced plans to move from Miami and out of Dolphins Stadium after the 2008 season due to a lack of progress for a Baltimore baseball only stadium in Dade County. This, of course,
I didn't know this.
But... yeah, well, they finally got their stadium.
Yep, so they did. That they most certainly did. Yeah, I mean,
it just took bulldozing the Orange Bowl, but they finally got it.
Yeah.
I mean, everything takes time. It will work out for itself. For some cities, not for all.
Very true.
I actually did not know that, because this is the start of a really long downswing for the Marlins. I don't think the Marlins ever get back to 500 until they finally make the playoffs in 2020.
Yeah, I think they did well in 08, because I know that was Hanley's breakout year. And Girardi won manager of the year, but then got fired.
Yeah.
But that was 2006.
I believe that was 08, because I think they won like 89 or 90 games or something.
Well, I want to say it was 06, because 07, he only coached that 1 year. He took a year off, and then he becomes Yankees manager
in 08. You're right. Now that I think about it, it was 07, because he started managing them in, I believe, 08?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right. My mistake. So, Thanksgiving. Two NFL games that day. The Falcons beat the Lions 27-7. Michael Vick threw touchdown passes to Algie Crumpler, and Warrick Dunn got 116 yards rushing. Also, the Denver Broncos beat the Cowboys 24-21 in overtime off of a A Jason Elam 24-yard field goal that was set up by a 55-yard run by Ron Dayne.
My God.
Who I totally forgot up until just now was a Bronco.
Yeah.
So that was a thing that happened. Also, in the world of college football, West Virginia beat Pitt in the backyard brawl. Pat White ran for 220 yards and two scores while throwing for a third. And Steve Slayton had 179 yards rushing with two TDs on the ground.
Yeah.
Also, let's see. Texas beat Texas A&M 40-29 on November the 25th. They will take on Big 12 North champion Colorado in Houston in the Big 12 championship game. Also, LSU beat Arkansas 19-17 to clinch the SEC West. They will be facing Georgia in the SEC championship game in Atlanta. Wisconsin beat Hawaii. And this was Wisconsin head coach Barry Alvarez's final regular season game. And Brian Calhoun ran for 133 yards as part of a 149-yard performance. That, of course, was in the first half. So we got 149 yards total, but 133 alone in the first half.
Yes.
Also on Saturday, let's see, Notre Dame beat Stanford 38-31. Stanford Stadium, this was before they reduced capacity to make it a more football-friendly facility. They became eligible for the BCS with this win. Brady Quinn threw for 432 yards and three touchdowns, two of them to Jeff Samardzija. And Darius Walker ran for 190 yards in the winning touchdown. In addition to that, Louisville beat Syracuse, significant because Syracuse went to had their first 10-loss season in 110 years of football.
Wow.
Indeed.
I thought Syracuse was kind of always sorry in football, so that's a shock to hear.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, they had McNabb, they had
Freeney.
Yeah. You know, the other guy from the Colts.
Yes, the other guy from the Colts.
The guy we're not going to talk about, the receiver.
I didn't know he went to Syracuse.
He did.
Yeah. Also, Colorado got to the Big 12 title game because Iowa State lost in overtime to Kansas 24-21.
I'm scared to like ask if people, you know, I've seen him around or know who he is. He's from here.
Yeah. No, be careful.
Sometimes. Yeah. By the way, it popped in my head like 20 minutes ago, but I just completely forgot. The other Peter Jackson movie I was thinking of was The Lovely Bones.
Oh there we go. Yeah.
Correct.
Really good fucking movie. Sorry. I kind of take back what I was saying about Peter Jackson.
No problem. All right. So week 12, the NFL. Also currently going on is UEFA group play. But we'll get more into that when it's out of group play.
Yeah, because I can't even think who was even in the final in 06.
Yeah, me neither, to be honest. There were a lot of close finishes this week. The Bears beat the Bucks 13-10. This was the eighth time this season that the Bears held an opponent to 10 points or less. They have now won 7 in a row. Also, let's see here. The Chiefs beat the Patriots 26-16. Brady threw 4 picks, 3 to Greg Wesley. Lawrence Tynes apparently tied the NFL record for field goals in a quarter with 4 in the second. The Chargers beat Washington 23-17. Tomlinson ran for 184 yards and 3 scores, including a 32-yard touchdown run to tie and a 41-yard touchdown on the first play from scrimmage in OT. I think I remember that score too.
Yeah.
The Rams beat the Texans 33-27 in OT. Houston held a 27-17 lead with a minute left. However, third string quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick threw a 43-yard touchdown to Isaac Bruce. The Rams recovered an onside kick. Jeff Wilkins hit a 47-yard field goal. And then Kevin Curtis caught a 56-yard touchdown pass from Fitzpatrick in OT.
Wow.
Time was a flat circle.
Ain't that the truth?
And then, yeah, we have one other thing from this week. November 22nd, the Xbox 360 was released, which I kind of forgot it was a full year before the PS3. But yeah, Xbox 360 is here. I think like the big games, you know, Rockstar, the ping pong game, and then Call of Duty 2 was a big one for 360. I didn't get one until I think 2007, 2008, but I also still have my original one. So I kind of worked out because the first couple of years, they just all broke all the time.
Mine lasted like 4 years. I got it in 06 and then it got red ringed. So
I bought mine in like the summer of 2008 and it red ringed 2 years later. So obviously it was a waste. Shouldn't have bought it, period. I don't know how to look back at the 360 era, right? Because I think when you compare it to the PS3, it was obviously the better of the two. I'm not fond of, I wasn't like exactly gaga over the 360 era. It's weird.
I mean, I think
great games, but
I think like sports games in particular really took a step up to an extent.
I think like for Madden specifically, because you have a couple of decent Maddens, like maybe Madden 10 was decent.
But
the PS2 Xbox era of Madden was like the creme de la creme.
Yeah
And it started to seem like you could remember when like they did rewind mode on Madden.
Yes.
Awful. And I think that's when they started to take a step back, and then PS4 era was just, you know, we're not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how to like properly assess that era. I had the choice of bringing my Xbox or my 360 back to Philly with me today, and I had to make the hard choice because I have more Xbox games. I just brought back the Xbox, but I will eventually bring back the 360 because NCAA 14 is on there, and that's the only place I can play it.
I still play that.
Yeah. And is the marketplace still up, or did they shut it down?
I think it's been shut down at this point. I don't have like one of the adapters, so whenever I connect to the internet, I have to like run an Ethernet cord and all through the house. So I don't do it often.
Got you. Yeah, I don't. I think my disk drive is fucked, so it probably wouldn't be a reason to go get an old disk. We'll see. But and plus, all those old Xbox games are probably just on the new anyway. So
yeah,
sure. Point. Yeah.
All right. Survivor Series 2005, November 27, 2005, the Joe Louis Arena. Second Survivor Series hosted in that build, or third actually, 1999 they also had in 1991. Yep. So they had some Halloween Havocs, just a building that had a lot of history, and
it's so much wrestling history.
No longer
Joe's been torn down, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the past couple of years I believe they finally tore it down. Little Caesars Arena, and
it also hosted Vengeance 2002, once talked about, which has arguably the greatest triple threat match of all time with The Rock, Taker, and Angle.
I mean, we just gonna forget about, you know.
Yeah, you know, that was Hogan against who did he face? Oh, he was a tag champ. Yeah. You know. But yeah.
Also, POD had the theme song for this, which was Lights Out. This is the start of a partnership that POD had, of course, because they will eventually do Rey Mysterio's theme song.
Yes.
But it is edited on the Survivor Series.
A lot of history with wrestling in Detroit in general, you know, WrestleMania 3, WrestleMania 23. We can get into it. Starting with Booker T against Chris Benoit, match one of their best of seven series. And, you know, these matches aren't going to give us much to talk about, but they're all going to be very good. But I mean, you've seen these guys wrestle before.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you kind of know how this goes. But Booker gets a pin with his feet on the ropes, and Charmel holds his feet for extra leverage, and Booker's up 1-0. And match two will be on the first of two SmackDowns next week, because they run an hour one on Tuesday, and then they have their full one on Friday still. So we're going to have to remember that.
Mm-hmm.
We move right into Melina against Trish Stratus, because on Peacock a certain segment has been cut for
the segment
for a good reason.
What's up?
Yeah, not ideal.
Melina is facing Trish Stratus for the WWE Women's Championship. They brawled on the outside. Melina was on the outside, and Eminem came in to snapshot Trish. However, the referee turned around and set them apart. And ejected Eminem. And Trish won with a top rope bulldog to retain her championship.
Yeah.
Pretty basic formulaic stuff, but they did what they had to do. I think Melina, for what she is at this point, looked good enough here in this match with Trish. And they obviously trust her at this point to lead, as they should. And they did the right thing.
Yeah, I didn't mind it. It wasn't the worst match of the night. So
No. Nothing will rival that either. So
Triple H and Ric Flair in action. Last man standing match that the Intercontinental title is not on the line for.
It's not, because this is personal. The video package for this was sensational, by the way.
Yeah. Triple H attacks Flair during his entrance. We get right to it. It's very long, but, you know, maybe it'll be good. Flair's bleeding early because Triple H attacked him with a screwdriver. Triple H goes for pedigree through the announce table a little bit later, and Flair backdrops him through the other announce table. Goes for another pedigree in the ring and a chair, and Flair hits a low blow. And that was kind of the thing, like Flair's just kind of surviving but not ever getting the upper hand, and then eventually Triple H just hits him in the head with the steps, and he gets up from that too. And then Triple H has to get the sledgehammer and hits him with that, and that's the finish, and Flair leaves on a stretcher. I think it was a little too long, and I think I like the cage match more, but it wasn't bad.
No, I think the cage match was slightly better, but I do really like this match a whole lot.
Yeah.
It's one of the better last man standing matches of this era.
Yeah, and it's a fine way to blow off their feud. Triple H can now go and focus on the Royal Rumble. We'll get more Flair as IC champ. How long is he IC champ?
Because
he's IC champ through WrestleMania, right?
No, I think Shelton gets the title.
That's right. Shelton gets it back at some point.
I think he wins it at New Year's Revolution.
Flair won it. No, he doesn't win at New Year's Revolution because Edge faces.
Oh yeah.
To start the show.
Shelton wins it in February on Raw.
Yeah, won it in February. I believe it was like February either 22nd or 29th.
20th in Trenton.
There we go.
And then him and Van Damme switch it back and forth.
Yeah.
And
I can't believe
Trenton's getting Monday Night Raws.
Yeah.
They were getting SmackDowns for a little while. Yeah.
That's fine, but just go to Philly.
I bet SmackDown was in Philly that week.
Yeah, probably.
It was pretty funny as
it were. Team SmackDown's in the back. You know, they're arguing a little bit, but Batista comes in and gets them on the same page, and it works. Then Edge is in the ring. Would you like to take over here?
Yeah, sure. Edge is here with Lita. Edge gets his own segment because he's being positioned very highly. Pretty soon he says that he's going to have his own talk show tomorrow, debuting tomorrow night, called The Cutting Edge. But right now he wants to talk to Dimitri Young, who is, of course, on the Detroit Tigers, sitting in the front row, noted WWE fan. Edge wanted to know how it felt going to spring training on a team with no chance to win the World Series. Is it a lack of talent or lack of steroids?
That is hilarious, by the way, since, you know, the Tigers ended up
in actually World good for the first yeah. time in forever.
Yeah.
Very, very hilarious there. There's also a pretty loud Let's Go Red Wings chant throughout the segment.
Yeah.
Because Edge talks down on Detroit and sports and whatnot.
Like, I don't know what the perception was of the Tigers at this point. And probably people thought the White Sox were just going to be able to, you know.
Well, also, keep in mind, we're 2 years removed from them losing 119 games.
Right. Yeah. So it's like the Tigers are still sorry at this point.
Yeah, because the Tigers really hadn't done anything for a while because they.
I think because at this point they have Bonderman, they have Verlander, like they're starting to get arms. So maybe mm-hmm. there's some respect there, but they're still the Tigers.
Yeah, well,
because up until now, they hadn't had a winning season since 1993.
Yeah, and also,
it's been a really long time.
They end up getting like a ton out of Kenny Rogers this year.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah. I don't know. Edge also called him Mark Henry, which
that guy
not yeah, ideal.
This got pretty uncomfortable towards the end of it.
That's kind of weird because like Dimitri Young didn't come in and beat up Edge or anything.
Why don't they do that?
You'd think they'd have some sort of
They just had the war of words. I mean, I'm sure that the Tigers probably didn't want him, you know,
no.
doing anything like that.
That's fair.
But you know, Young put over the teams of Detroit, talked about how the Red Wings have all those Stanley Cups, which they showed the banners of, how the Pistons have 3 world titles, how the Tigers have like 5 at this point, I think it was, he said. And Demetri Young basically ended the interview by saying that, where is Edge's world championship?
Yeah.
So that's going to drive him a little bit mad for the next month or two. We'll see what happens there.
Yes. Speaking of world champions, John Cena's in action against Kurt Angle. The title's on the line. Daivari is still the ref. Daivari refuses to count anytime Cena has Angle pinned. Kurt puts on the ankle lock, but Cena won't tap. Crowd's not super into Cena.
Honestly, I don't want to say that I get it, but this is so very hypocritical of me, because I'm always like, well, you can find better ways to react to the show. However, we're doing this, crony referee shit with handpicked stuff. Seen it how many times in the last 7 years?
Yeah.
It's just not working. I remember watching this, and at the time, I didn't really care for it. And again, this was something that I didn't know if it was the groupthink aspect or if it was actually pretty bad. This was easily the worst Cena Angle match they've done.
Yeah. Cena slapped Daivari, and Daivari was going to disqualify him, but Angle said not to do that, which I liked. That was good, at least.
Agreed, yeah.
Daivari gets taken out, and then Chad Patton comes out, and then Angle takes him out, and then another ref comes out. He gets taken out.
Again, we don't need to do all this.
We end up with Charles Robinson as the ref, who technically is on SmackDown, and I don't know if they're going to do something with that.
They probably will.
But, yeah.
Well, actually, do they? Because I remember Angle and Cena had a first blood match on the first Raw of 06, but I can't remember if it was a title match.
But yeah, Cena retains, so they've had a lot of better matches.
I think it was because I think that was the quote unquote blow off for them.
Okay.
Because I think it's the first SmackDown of January 06 where Batista drops the belt, they do the battle royal, and Angle went gig. Because I remember that being the same week. So I think that is for the title.
Okay. Well, actually, no, because the Angle thing happens the second SmackDown. Because it's after New Year's Revolution, because as I remember, it was a crazy week that, everything happened. And Angle was in the Elimination Chamber match, and he was on Raw. He went to SmackDown, and then he faced Shawn for the fourth time for the world I can't remember if the world title was on the line. But Angle, this is pretty much the last marquee Cena-Angle match, and this is what they delivered. It's annoying.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I don't care for this, this anti-authority angle. I've already said that since the Cena Bischoff feud started back in June. It just isn't necessary.
Well, we only have a couple more weeks of Eric Bischoff.
That is true, because the trash is being taken out.
Exactly. speaking of Eric Bischoff, he lost a match to Teddy Long, the Wrestling Observer Newsletter worst match of 2005.
And what? I agree with the readers.
Yeah. And
that was a waste of everyone's time.
Time for our main event. Team SmackDown against Team Raw. 5-on-5 Survivor Series elimination match. Taz and Joey Styles seem to not like each other in commentary.
The banter between these two broadcast teams was hilarious.
Yeah.
Taz especially brought the thunder. I enjoyed Taz throughout this entire match.
Kane chokeslams Lashley from the apron, and Shawn gets the cover for the first elimination, which...
That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, you're trying to build a guy up. You probably shouldn't have him lose right away, but...
I mean, he's eliminated because Kane, of all
people. Yeah.
Chokeslam. If Kane can chokeslam and injure the world heavyweight champion, he can do the same to Lashley.
Yeah. Batista comes in Lashley's place and spears Kane, and Ray hits a 619, and Batista hits a spinebuster, so it's back to 4-4.
Mm-hmm.
Kane and Big Show double chokeslam Batista again, so he's out.
Yep.
4-3. JBL hits a clothesline from hell on Big Show, then Ray hits a 619, then Orton hits an RKO, and then JBL hits another clothesline from hell, and then Ray hits a senton, and they get rid of Big Show.
Once again, Big Show being put over as a beast.
Yeah.
Needs to be hit with like 4 or 5 finishers here.
Carlito comes in, and him and Ray kind of have a match for a while, and JBL blind tags Ray and hits clothesline from hell on Carlito, so SmackDown takes their first lead.
A good showing for Carlito. He's building up his trust as he should, because he's a great worker.
Yeah. Ray hits a 619 on Chris Masters, so SmackDown is up 3-1.
Yep.
And Shawn Michaels all that's left for Raw, and he was kind of taken out outside the ring earlier.
Is he going to do the same thing that he did in 03? Is he going to come back from down 3-1?
Yeah. he gets in the ring and Ray hits a 619 and goes to drop the dime, but Sean does the Shelton super kick, which I forgot he did it again. Yep,
he did. He sure did.
So it's 2-1 SmackDown. JBL comes in, gets sweet chin music immediately. So we're down to Orton against Michaels. Sean goes to tune up the band and JBL comes back in with a chair and Sean ducks, hits him with sweet chin music, but Randy hits the RKO and gets the win. And he's the sole survivor
for the third year in a row.
Yeah.
He's the sole survivor for the third year in a row.
Mr. Survivor Series. Congratulations. I mean, it's natural that now he has the most Survivor Series appearances. Exactly.
Yeah. The whole roster comes out to celebrate with Randy, and then Undertaker comes out of a vertical casket because they are continuing that feud.
They are.
With one more famous match. But that's Survivor Series.
Very hot ending. That shot of Taker kicking open the flaming doors.
Yeah.
One that gets replayed a lot. Very ill. Great shot to end on with Randy's face just bewildered. Given all of the challenges, Eddie passing away a few weeks earlier, the overseas trip that quickly, they did a very fine job with getting the Survivor Series off and as well as they have, you know, given the circumstances. I think they deserve some credit there. Some hiccups, yeah. You know, the WWE title match was not what we know they can put forth, as we've seen better Triple H, better John Cena, Kurt Angle matches. Triple H and Ric Flair went a tad bit too long, and then who in the blue hell for his last match booked Eric Bischoff versus Teddy Long? Send them to the gulag,
yeah,
immediately. But yep. This main event definitely saved everything. And that's why, honestly, like, is there any debate when I can't get a ring?
No, it's got to be Randy.
Got to be Randy.
Yeah. It's definitely Randy. 3 years in a row, and, you know, you got a lot more in him. And, you know, not only that, just to set the record this weekend. Just,
yeah, I was going to say. Has,
mm-hmm. You know, Randy gets a lot of shit. He gets a lot of shit from wrestling fans who like to uphold their own morality about certain things. And of course, people shit on him because he can be boring as hell sometimes. But Randy, you talk about the last 20 years. Name me five that are greater than Randy. You can probably get to four, but you find a fucking fifth. I don't know if you can find a fifth.
Yeah, it's tough from, you know, like a consistency standpoint too,
and just
like
an overall body of work just, and accolades and accomplishments. I mean,
plus, you know, all the guys,
how that, over like fucking Rover you can be, no too, matter yeah. what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, Randy's been in some duds of programs before that he's been able to get over because he's Randy fucking Orton.
Yeah, and I mean, like, guys that I would put on my list, you know, Brock took a lot of time off. Brian took a lot of time off. So it's like, you know, Randy never really did that. And I mean, that's not a knock on those guys, but like, the only time that
Randy is like really taking the time off. What was that? 2000? Was that 2016? When he had all that time off with the injury?
Because he was gone from like, I want to say winter 2015 all the way up till Battleground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's when he finally.
That was like his first missed Mania in like years.
Right. And so he comes back, he does the match with Brock, which was great up until they stopped it.
Yes.
And then you go to SmackDown, you immediately start the Wyatt feud and hot as a fucking button going into WrestleMania. So, you know, Randy's been a part of pro wrestling for virtually the entire time, the last 20 years, and as consistent as ever. And man, another testament, three straight Survivor Series, being the last man standing, as young as he was, like, they were definitely making it known that this guy is going to be around for a very long time. I think we're done here. You can follow me on Twitter at Cameron Santo, Rob's at RobOneNeil31, Chris is at Chris M. Novak, at BarberChairNet on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook.com/BarberChairDigital. We hope you guys have a lovely Thanksgiving. Of course, I flew out of Chicago the day before AEW is there. God damn it. Yeah, hopefully something big happens and we can actually talk about AEW, because I'm going to try to get my catching up on, and hopefully I have some thoughts next week. But anyway, for Chris, for Rob, I am Pierce. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful Turkey Day. Please get all of your rest. Do not waste your time. Do not wake up early on Thursday. You're going to be better off for it. Listen, go out on Blackout Wednesday. Go get drunk. Go get fucked up. Go live it up with your family. The cousins that you ain't seen in a while that just want to go across the corner. Go do all of that. And then just, if you got to help out moms or grandma, go do it. Definitely don't leave her hanging in the kitchen. But, you can take your time with getting yourself ready on Thursday. Because Cowboys, if you're on the West Coast, start at what, like 1:30, 2 o'clock?
Mm-hmm,
oh, perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Perfect timing. You ain't got to worry about it. I don't even know who the fucking Lions quarterback is. I was gonna call him David Blau. Oh wow. This has been Ruthless Aggression. Thanks for joining us, man. Have a good holiday. We'll see you guys later.